start with Shakespeare's farewell play The Tempest, brought to the Theatre Haymarket as part of director Trevor Nunn's residency as artistic director there, with Ralph Fiennes as Prospero. We've seen Ralph Fiennes on the Shakespearean stage many times before. Is he bringing his Shakespearean career full circle?
Well, Ralph is about to be 50, or he's a couple years off 50, whatever. And of course, the thing about Prospero in the play is that he has a daughter, Miranda, who's, what, 15? So it's entirely plausible that he can be, you know, Prospero can be Ralph's age. You think of him being this wizened man sort of crawling towards death. But of course, Shakespeare himself died when he was in his early 50s, so I have no problem with the age issue. And it sort of tallies with the Trevor Nunn ethos these days of casting everyone younger than you might think, to wit, Little Night Music with Hannah Waddingham. I thought Ralph was the best thing about this production. I thought the production was extremely poor, which is a shame, really, because when Trevor directed Flare of Path brilliantly, one of my productions of the year, and it still is, I thought, he's sort of regained his moxie, but that seems to have retreated. And Ralph, just because he knows how to speak the language and knows how to connect up both with the verse, the rhetoric, and the other actors, particularly Elizabeth Hopper as Miranda, who I thought was very, very good in her Shakespearean debut, he's lovely to watch and very affecting. The rest of it was like The Tempest 101 for idiots.
The girl playing Miranda, of course, was in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, but in a non-speaking part.
Yes, as a courtier or some such.
So she's kind of made a big leap, hasn't she?
Well, not as much of a leap, you'll forgive the imagery, as the Ariel, A-E-R-I-E-L, Ariel, and also the Black Caliban, which I thought was sort of patronizing, so that we have this thing of darkness, I acknowledge mine, is actually a black actor. There's a really strange literal mindedness to the rest of it, and it's very cloying and sort of fey. And there's an awful mask scene towards the end, which is like something out of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Did you have a better time, Charlie?
No. In fact, possibly slightly worse. I mean, I do think Ralph Fiennes was easily the best thing in it. I think it's a disastrous production, to be honest, because it also sentimentalises the play. Everyone always talks about The Tempest being a play about, you know, it is a farewell to the theatre, and I think that's pretty clear. I don't think that's sentimental to view that. But the ending of the play is not nearly a sort of, you know, the mellow autumnal glow. It's a very hard-won forgiveness. And, you know, it ends up with him kissing Caliban and shaking his brother by the hand, and so that's all rubbish. It's much harder than that, or should be. And then, you know, there's the aerial ballet, the flying sequence. I mean, it was just like something out of Holiday on Ice, to be honest, but not as good. And I think I just can't understand Trevor Nunn. I get more and more obsessed by him, because at his best, he is brilliant. And then, but more and more these days, he seems to be sentimental, long-winded, over-literal. At his best, and Flare Path was at his best, but this is a really bad, sentimental, often not particularly well-acted production, and worthless, I think. But it will sell out on the strength of Ralph Fiennes' name.
I've not seen the production, so I'm not here to criticise it. But I have a question to ask those who have seen it, which is: this is one of Shakespeare's shortest plays. How has Trevor Nunn? I mean, we know Trevor Nunn makes everything slow, but this is coming in at three hours.
Yeah. How? The shortest play.
That's what he does.
Well, Ralph speaks very slowly and very deliberately
and very clearly. And very clear.
Yes, but. One of the things that Brandage's productions, of course, have, they go really fast, and everybody thought that he cut King Lear, but in fact he made barely any cuts, because people spoke at conversational pace. In this production, people speak at Shakespearean pace.
The other thing that happens in Brandage's production is people speak on the line. They don't break the line up to have a look, have a thought. They think as they speak, so it keeps moving.
I didn't see it after it transferred to the London. I saw it at Chichester. I mean, he completely lost the lightness of touch of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Again, he made that a penance, that play.
He added lines from Hamlet to it, to get it longer.
Oh. No, the man's prolixity.
The line in Winter will be 3 hours.
Yeah, easily. And the man's prolixity is a serious problem. I mean, because, you know, and someone, I mean, why can't someone, because he's so grand, I suppose, but someone should just tell him, look, Trev, bring in the bloody shows at 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
You know, but he wouldn't buy it.
At the slight digression, but at the Shakespeare's Globe Jamboree coming next April, April 23rd to June 3rd, they were saying at the press conference the other day that all of the participating plays have to be 2.25 hours. So I thought, well, that's Trevor Nunn out.
Exactly. The Young Vic recently revived its hit production of Martin McDonagh's The Beauty Queen of Le Mans, in which a grievously put-upon adult daughter finally snaps, hitting her mother over the head with fatal results. Now, just down the street at the Old Vic, J.M. Singh's The Playboy of the Western World is being revived, in which a young man arrives in another Irish rural town, seeking refuge after hitting his father over the head and telling the locals that he'd killed him. But has he? The Old Vic's new production is directed by John Crowley and features TV star Robert Sheehan in the title role, making his stage debut in a cast that also includes Ruth Negga and Niamh Cusack. Charlie, this play was last done, I think, in London at the National, 2001. It's been a little while, and yet it's this great classic. We don't see it that often.
No, I'm glad we don't, in a way. It's a fascinating play. I mean, you mentioned The Beauty Queen of Linane, and it is the sort of archetypal Irish play. And in fact, when Stephen Ray did it at the National sort of 20 years before the one you just mentioned, he said that for Irish actors, the main part is the man, the boy who's tried or possibly has killed his father, is their Hamlet. Interesting, actually, about killing fathers as well, isn't it? But it's absolutely seen as the hoop through which every likely Irish actor must jump. I love it as a play. I must have seen it about three or four or five times. It's Singh had a lovely preface to it where he said that he tried to make every speech should have the flavour of an apple or a nut. And there is a wonderful quality in the writing where it's something that's again gone right through Irish theatre, this sort of lyricism and vernacular poetry. And it is an absolutely text, really. I mean, it is the birth of Irish theatre as we know it today, and it's amazing how its persistence has lingered on. I thought this production was very good, just missed greatness for me. I don't know why, but very, solid, very solid 4-star show, I thought. But I took my wife along. She's a very open-minded person, but she's got a particular thing against the Irish. She finds them feckless, and we had a disastrous holiday there, and even she quite enjoyed it. So, and it couldn't be more Irish. So it's a good night and some very good performances. But doubtless we'll come on to them in a minute.
The Old Vic does their typical huge production. I mean, there's a set that revolves and it trundles forward.
That was the one thing I didn't like. Yeah. I have to say. It was a musical. Exactly. I mean, there was absolutely no need for it, and it annoyed me that.
It's funny you said, because I was going to. It's Scott Pask, who's brilliant and who does a lot of John Crowley's stuff and has won Tony Awards and did the extraordinary work on John's extraordinary production of The Pillow Man. But it sort of looks like the set wants to have a curtain call. Why? I think actually I agree with Charlie 100% on this. It's a very good, solid, straightforward production of the play. It doesn't reinvent the play. It doesn't do a Rupert Gould on it. It doesn't set it on Mars. It just gives you this extraordinary language where people in kind of Irish backwaters use language like bedizened just naturally. They seem to wear language gloriously, but without self-consciousness.
At the Donmar warehouse, another out-of-towner arrives, disconcertingly as if spat out of the sea itself, in Eugene O'Neill's 1921 play Anna Christie, and proceeds to wreak havoc on the emotions of the title character as he becomes locked into a battle of possession over her with her father. Rob Ashford's production stars Jude Law as the man and Ruth Wilson as Anna Christie. David, both... Jude, of course, recently played Hamlet for the Donmar. Ruth Wilson was extraordinary in A Streetcar Named Desire, and which was directed by Rob Ashford. And the Donmar really have a knack for producing this kind of great theatre, I think.
I think this is a really major production. It's not a major play. It's an interesting play. It usually, I think, appears rather flawed because it tries too hard. It strives to make its effects. It's got a lot of imagery that's terribly well underlined by Eugene O'Neill, who's really serious about his ideas. This production almost makes you not notice any of that. It's an epic production in a 250-seat thrust stage space. Paul Wills' design is fantastically exciting. And the really interesting thing about this is that Rob Ashford, directing his, I think, third play ever, does this enormous production that is wholly successful in realising the vision of the play. And he does that partly because he puts something in there that isn't actually in the script. He puts in a storm scene that isn't in there. It's there in order to work up all the imagery of the sea, which is constantly talked about by these characters. If you don't have it, it seems like hard work by the actors. Because there is this massive storm scene, and the, as you say, washes Jude Law up out of the waves onto the stage, you sort of buy everything that surrounds it, because you understand that they live by the sea, because it's so elemental. It's a really, really fine piece of work.
Yes, I mean, if I were Rob Ashford, I wonder how I would describe my own career, because it seems to me that more than any other director working now, he has this sort of split self to his career, not necessarily of his own making. A lot of it has to do with producers and what they will allow. But he does these very glossy, glitzy, expensive revivals on Broadway of musicals that have big stars in them. Sean Hayes in Promises, Promises, Danny Radcliffe at the moment in How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. And then he comes to London in a 250-seater where the ticket prices are pennies compared to these Broadway behemoths, and he does his art. You know, he does Parade, he does Streetcar, the first ever play he's ever done, and now he does this. Each of them very good. I think this is the best of those three. I think it's probably one of the two or three productions of the year. And it just works on every level. The play, as David has suggested, the play has flaws, but actually the thing about O'Neill is you just have to deal with them and take them on board and surmount them and transcend them and actually enjoy them. So there's something of all of that in this. Jude Law, an actor who I didn't really do it for me as Hamlet, I think this is his best stage performance by far. And he seems to be reinventing himself physically, God knows, credit to his personal trainer, but also mentally. And Ruth Wilson, there's a fantastic quality to her, Anna Christie, at the end of the play where she's standing at the top of this amazing set. And it's almost like something out of Pinterest, The Homecoming, where, you know, the woman in this male-dominated world, the woman who's been beaten down by life, and particularly beaten down by men, is the one who, figuratively speaking, has the last word. It's very, very powerful.
Of course, the last Anna Christie we saw was Natasha Richardson.
Which I missed, I'm afraid.
In London, but then she did it on Broadway as well with Liam Neeson, which is where they met.
Together.
So there's a bit of sweet quality there. But so it's not a play you know terribly well.
No, I was seeing it for the first time, and I think the point about O'Neill, almost, as Matt was saying, is that there are flaws, and they're always slightly windy, aren't they, and go on a bit. But there's a kind of sort of power in his work that makes your own carping criticism seem redundant, and it really does blow you away. I was very annoyed with several of the reviews that went on about the act. It's just a feast of funny accents, which really annoyed me. I mean, I thought the accents were perfectly done, but people say it was, you know, or you couldn't get beyond the accents, which I thought was ridiculous. Absolute garbage, I thought, and sort of cheap points, because actually there was something noble about this play. There really is. And Ruth Wilson, I think, is a really, really major actress. I mean, because her Stella in Streetcar was wonderful.
Fantastic.
And now this, where she plays a sort of basically, I mean, she's a woman on the run, ill, and a prostitute, and, you know, no hope, it seems, and yet incredibly strong as well. I think it's a marvellous play. I do hope when the Don Mar changes hands, I mean, you could accuse Grandage occasionally, as he sort of seemed to be setting himself up slightly with the spelling bee, you know, about always putting on lachrymose fare, but I do like the way that theatre does take itself seriously. There's so much irony and humour available elsewhere, and putting on these great big neglected plays, someone's really got to do it. I mean, we haven't had a big O'Neill revival, unless you count that very early play since the one at the National, you know,
when it becomes Electra.
Yeah.
One of the things that is so remarkable about Ashford's work is that, you know, this is a choreographer. Until he did Parade, he was a choreographer, and actually in Parade,
a Broadway dancer,
yeah. Indeed. In Parade, he casts Bertie Carvel in the lead, who's never done a musical before, and you get this incredibly relaxed performance from Carvel, and the. And in this, the emotions are titanic, as we keep saying, there's this sort of monolithic quality to O'Neill's writing, and he sort of bludgeons you into submission. And by the end of it, you go, yes, okay, I buy it.
I surrender.
I surrender. Nobody shouts. you know, in so many productions, there are most directors out there these days are busy trying to push everything to operatic levels of emotions because somehow that's going to make us feel more. Of course, the reverse is actually true. What you end up with normally is an enormous amount of emoting and the audience bored and watching actors shout. Nobody shouts in this. This Jude Law sort of has a towering rage that he keeps a lid on, so you keep with him. The second somebody shouts, it becomes generalised and you check out. Nobody checks out in this production. We're glued.
Next, two plays, both originally seen at the Royal Court, are being revived at the National and the West End's Trafalgar Studios, respectively. Arnold Wesker's 1959 play, The Kitchen, and Carol Churchill's 1982 Top Girls also have something else in common. While The Kitchen is set behind the scenes in a restaurant kitchen, the opening scene of Top Girls is set in a restaurant where women across different generations of history meet. David, these are both major plays, of course. And actually, what's really interesting about the Top Girls is Max Stafford Clarke, who directed the original, is back with it. The Kitchen, we saw 15 years ago. When Stephen Daldry directed it at the Royal Court as the farewell production of the old Royal Court. So it's really great to have them both back, and interesting they both come back at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me that in a way, it may be about my expectations. I expected less of The Kitchen. I saw the Daldry production in 94. I realised that I remembered nothing about it apart from the mise-en-scène and Mark Thompson's beautiful set. Whereas Top Girls is a play I know extremely well. I think it's one of the great plays of the century. Carol Churchill remains criminally underrated. She's a truly great dramatist, and it's probably her best play. That and A Number. I was slightly disappointed by Top Girls, and actually I was appointed, if that's not a word, but it should be, by The Kitchen. In the first half of The Kitchen, which is superbly choreographed as well as it is directed, I thought, actually, this is all production and no play. I was very suspicious and grand. And then in the interval, I calmed down. And the second half, where the focus of the play is much tighter, I decided, actually, no, I'd misjudged it. And this was a better production than I had considered it to be. I think Tom Brooke is spectacular in the lead performance, one of the performances of the year. And the ensemble work is absolutely beautiful. And that really lived. There's something about this production of Top Girls, however. It may be the casting of Saran Jones, who I think is a bit glib as Marlene, who is the central character that you sort of see throughout the play, who runs this agency, which was trying to make women succeed, which is what the idea of the play is all about. She doesn't quite do it for me. I still think it is a magnificent play. It builds and builds and builds to the last act, which makes revelations about character. It's the perfect expression of the personal is political. The revelations of character in the last act are so profoundly upsetting about how sacrifices people make and their understanding of who they are and who they are politically. That connection is unbelievably powerful, and it just missed it for me. But I still think that anybody that's interested in drama of the 20th century should be going hot footing it to Top Girls.
Well, indeed, for both plays, actually. I mean, they're both historical.
Yes, indeed.
They have come alive again.
I don't actually rate Carol Churchill as highly as David. I've found a lot of her work a mixture of sort of fey and sort of contentious over the years. And I'd never seen Top Girls, and it was a real. I saw it in Chichester rather than in the West End, so it's some time ago since I saw it. But it resonated very profoundly with me. I think it is a brilliant play about the 80s and the attitudes to it. The first dinner party scene with all these very obscure but interesting women from history is an absolute tour de force, and the way Max directs it is just breathtaking, I think. I mean, you can hear some of it and you can't hear other bits, but you're absolutely hooked throughout. And then suddenly there's this great emotional clout in the play, which I don't normally find in Carol Churchill. I mean, I think she's full of really interesting ideas, but the play becomes very moving. And it struck me as being, I'm basically an old Tory, and then she's a quite hard left winger, but it moved me very much indeed, that production. And I think it was, and if it can move a Tory, about the Thatcher, what was wrong film of the Thatcherism age. I think it's obviously got something very powerful for it, going for it. I thought it was terrific.
Except that actually I think that the abiding strength of this production, and actually not even so much this production, because I'm not entirely convinced it's the best possible production of the play, but I think the abiding strength of the play is what you've pinpointed, which is that it goes beyond being a comment on the Thatcher era, whether or not that is what prompted it. Of course it is. And I saw it originally at the Public Theatre in New York, the original production, which came over with Lindsay Duncan and Deborah Finley and so on. And then Max revived it here in 1992, so I've seen all of these. Maybe part of the problem is that Max has directed it so many times that he hears it, but he isn't working quite so hard to make sure that we hear it. I remember being a little bit more shaken by the production in 1992.
Me too.
I like this one very much. The last word of the play is the word frightening, and I remember thinking, oh my God, that I was just on the floor, and this time it didn't quite land, but leaving that aside, what's interesting about the play is it's really a play about how people decide to live their lives.
Yes.
And the face-off between these two sisters in 2011 still resonates, because those choices are being made every single day between friends, within families, and, you know, it's very, very rich.
It's never a trend. Just to go back to the kitchen, though, I thought it was stunningly done, and I thought a lot of the reviews were very grudging, as though it wasn't as good as Stephen Daldry's. I think it absolutely was, and actually the bit where, and it sort of pushed it into the surreal, and when people started flying and the conductor appeared like Stokowski, you know, conducting it all, I thought it was absolutely brilliant piece of theatre. I don't think it's a very good play. I think the storyline is too slight. There is no one you can really get hold of. You don't quite know why the hero goes berserk. I think it's a pretty crap play.
I think it's a very, very good idea and not a terribly good play.
No. Finally, among the rivals of old plays, the newest is one of Arthur Miller's final plays, Broken Glass, originally premiered in 1994 and whose first London production was at the National Theatre. Now it's back in the West End via a production first seen at the Tricycle last year, which Anthony Sher plays a man who is in denial of his Jewish religion, and Tara Fitzgerald as his wife, whose fears of the rise of Nazism in Germany lead her to become physically paralysed, just as he is emotionally paralysed. David, have you seen this play? Do you see the original production?
I didn't see it at the Tricycle, but I saw the original production, and I'm afraid I didn't like it then. I went to the Vaudeville, and I didn't like it all over again. One of the problems I have with this production is that it is sporting the worst set of American accents it's ever been my misfortune to witness on the London stage. I mean, literally nobody spoke with anything. I mean, there are people sort of doing English inflections and English rhythms, and then they say Neubus and think that that's okay. It was like listening to six singers who can't quite stay in tune. I have no idea why the director cast people that can't do that. I have no idea why they managed to get through a rehearsal period and sound like that. But also, I just thought that it had clearly transferred very badly. The set doesn't really make sense in town. I can imagine that up close and personal in the 300 and whatever it is seat Tricycle, it would look rather interesting. And it would give focus to these performances that seem marooned. Tony Sher is speaking very slowly. I'm not going to attempt an American accent because it'll show me up. But he's speaking very, very slowly because there is a line there about thoughts don't come to me very quickly. And you go, that's a terribly literal interpretation of that line. I just think that it's, again, a really interesting idea about the paralysis of a person in the face of world events. You know, I watch it as a Jewish man, thinking, well, you know, Arthur Miller is a Jew. This should be speaking to me. I feel completely disassociated from its ideas, which seem to me to be thuddingly literal in a way that Death of a Salesman, which I also think is a extraordinarily Jewish play, although not in many productions, because that's about assimilation and acceptance wholly and completely. That's a really interesting treatment of the subject. This is a very literal and obvious treatment of the subject, and it just didn't sing for me, and it seemed to last hours.
And yet it's one of the, oh, well, it is the only serious play in the West End apart from Warhol's until Jerusalem arrives. So I think, if anything, I just wanted to celebrate that. I mean, yeah. Maybe it's, I actually did enjoy it, and I thought was really powerful. Yeah.
By and large, late Arthur Miller is second-rate Arthur Miller, but and the ideas in this play are somewhat clunky. But I thought Scher's performance was something that I will never forget, and I've now seen it twice, and I thought it was, has extraordinary power. And Tara Fitzgerald was lovely as his wife. She's got a sort of luminosity about her. I think she's had a sort of rather sort of wasted career, and I think she should be a really big leading lady by now. And also lovely performance from the Irish actor Stanley Townsend, who I've always liked as this sort of doctor who's so at ease with himself and his body in the way that Scher isn't. I think it's got, I think the production is better than the play, and it really, and that's the only sort of really serious piece on in London at the moment. It's very important.
I wonder, I saw it a week after it opened, and it feels like there are either playing their reviews or the director hasn't been in since press night, but everything is spiralled so far over the top. I mean, Tony Scher comes on at the beginning absolutely agonised and never looks back, and it's so intense from the word go that you actually cannot warm to his plight. He doesn't seem confused, he seems absolutely incandescently furious, and that's a pretty hard watch.
On that note, thanks Matt, David and Charlie.